Hi, Skunky.
Dad?
I missed you.
How'd you...
I'm sorry I couldn't be there for you, Stinky.
You're not real. None of this is real.
That's my scientist.
When I was unconscious, you downloaded my thoughts, my memories, even the old bowling alley.
Yes, we thought this bowling alley would be more fun than our alien spaceship or some boring beach.
Why did you contact us?
You contacted us.
Whoa, okay, sorry, geez, relax.
My bad, you're right. It's whatever, I'm just saying it was you first.
Are there otters?
Otters?
I mean others. Sorry, I'm a little woozy from the wormholes and, you know.
Yeah, no, sure. You're an interesting species, humans. Capable of beautiful dreams and such horrible nightmares. You feel so lost, so cut off, so alone. Only, you're not. See, in all of our searching, the only thing we found that makes the emptiness bearable is each other.
I'm sorry, can you start over? I was watching this guy hit a 7-10 split. I missed all of that. But did you see that?
What? Marissa, pay attention. I'm an alien here, okay? And I'm telling you some very vague, unhelpful stuff.
Look, fake dad, I'm gonna go hit the fake arcade and hopefully get enough fake tickets to get a fake tattoo, all right?
Okay, all right. Have fun, Skunky. I love you.
No, you don't.
Ah, that's true.
Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight?
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Bad Science. I'm your host, Ethan Edinburgh, and I am psyched beyond belief to be talking about Contact today, the Robert Zemeckis film from 1997. My two guests are too cool to be in the same room as me, that's for sure. I'm humbled, I'm nervous, I'm frantic, but I'm going to play it cool on the outside as to not let them know that I'm freaking out on the inside.
You're doing a good job.
You just literally let us know.
What?
You
guys can hear
me?
You can hear this entire...
We're sitting next to you.
Holy shit. Okay, never mind all that. Let me just introduce them. The first one is an astrophysicist at the Ohio State University, science communicator, and author of the new book, Your Place in the Universe, Understanding Our Big Messy Existence, Dr. Paul Sutter.
How's it going?
Going great. How you doing?
Never better.
Wow. This is the best moment of your life right now.
It only to be followed by the next moment, which will be better than the last.
I love your attitude coming into this. And of course, we are joined here by a brilliant comedian. You may know him from The Larry Sanders Show or The Simpsons or the legendary sketch comedy troupe, The Kids in the Hall. It's Scott Thompson.
Hello there.
How's it going, Hello. Scott?
I feel like Scott needs an applause.
Yeah, let's give him an applause. You're right.
I should have. I'm sorry, I didn't clap for you, Doctor.
It's cool. I don't.
Because I thought you were from the other, from at Ohio State.
And Ohio State. Yeah,
that would have been impressive.
No.
Now that I know, I get this.
They're okay. I'm going to clap. Go Bucks.
Yeah. But we're here today, guys, to talk about Contact, which maybe some of you have not seen. So we'll try and like quickly summarize what happened in this movie. And you'll probably be able to do this better than me. But
ooh, challenge.
Jodie Foster's character, Ellie. Yeah. Learned through.
She's quite overwrought.
Yes.
In it.
Typical scientist.
Yeah, I've never quite seen her so overwrought.
Very.
She goes on the journey through the wormhole. Wow.
Yeah, it's
She's
a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
She looks like one of those, you know, when you're on a roller coaster and the picture that they take?
Yeah.
She looks like that at the peak of the ride the whole time.
And
you can't blame her. It is a wormhole.
Yeah.
It's a wormhole traveling through time and space.
She's usually a little more like low-key, but she really goes for it.
That's true.
Really, that is acting.
And when it's about, but what's funny, it's not about really emotions. She gets super dramatic about science.
Yeah, it's just
intense.
Where
she's never really like that when she's doing things about humans, like human behavior.
Right.
I find it fascinating, a peek into her as an actress.
Yeah.
So is Jodie Foster like a science geek? Is
that it seems
you
like
think,
it.
You think
well,
it's coming
that's what
through?
It felt like.
I have a fact here about Jodie Foster.
What's
Hold on
fact?
A second. In 2011, Jodie Foster was part of a group of private donors that saved SETIs. Do you say
SETI?
SETI. Okay. Yeah. I don't know why it's Italian. They saved SETI's telescope array in California. So that was under some sort of like government funding attack, and she helped put it back online. So I assume she has some interest.
She's connected.
Yeah,
she's listening.
Very
she's waiting
it.
For the
Much
moment.
More than she is Matthew McConaughey.
Like, yeah.
Okay. He's not funding SETI.
No.
And I think he's Christian like he is in the movie, and Jodie Foster is atheist or agnostic like she is in the movie. So that's kind of a fun parallel.
Sort of.
Right. That's true. You could argue, at the end.
I think so. Don't they?
Yeah. I think that's probably where it's
faith,
coming together.
Doesn't that work? Isn't that kind of about the faith and science coming together?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, this whole story, one of the themes was the intersection and potential conflict between science and faith, and where there's the staunch stereotypical scientist, rejects all faith. And then at the end, no one believes her personal experience.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, I lived it. And it was very intensely emotional. I made the roller coaster face.
Yeah.
It was there. It was
even though no one took the picture.
But no one took the picture.
How can you be on a roller coaster if no one took a picture of you?
So she has to rely on her faith. There's no scientific evidence that she experienced what she claims to
experience. It's like going to a party, like pre-social media, and people not believing you had fun. Like, how could you? Like, nowadays, they can't believe it unless there's a photograph.
Right. You definitely didn't have a good time.
You didn't have a good time. But it is a lot like that.
That's also something I wanted to talk about, by the way. And we were discussing it a little bit before the podcast about technology, becoming too much, I guess, in our society today.
That's definitely a theme in that movie. I think it's quite prescient about it, I thought.
Yeah, he calls it out, Matthew McConaughey's character, who I don't even remember his name, but he calls it out in some CNN interview, and he's saying, I think I have a quote here somewhere. Is the world fundamentally a better place because of science and technology? Which I think is a good... What do you guys think?
Well, yes, I do, because otherwise most of us would die very young of horrible diseases, number one.
Great.
Or if we had broken bones, they would have gotten infected. I wouldn't have lived past five. There's no question. First of all, even just the fact that I was blind from, I can barely see, I would have run into a...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Off a cliff.
A wall.
I'm not, a wall or a saber-toothed tiger or something. There's no way I would.
You know those are extinct. Never mind.
But I do think it's better. Yes, I do think so.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. Strong yes.
What about you, doctor?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. This is your show.
No, I don't care. Take it over, Scott. This is your show.
No.
And please call me Professor Sutter.
And
that came up in the movie because, and already think of it was like 1997, which seems like the Stone Age to us. I mean, that's two decades ago. Mm-hmm. But then there's the aliens come and give the signal and say, here's the next big leap. Mm-hmm. Like, here's something that's so transformative. Oh, it's like the iPhone. It's like, this is something that is going to change your entire civilization, and it's just the beginning. And so grappling with that of like, how do we deal with rapid progress in technology? How do we deal with quantum leaps in technology where the world today is basically unrecognizable to the world 10 or 20 years ago?
Yeah.
In my opinion, technology itself is neutral, and we're always going to have technology. Like, it's something that humans do. A stone hand axe is technology. Fire is technology. Agriculture, alcohol, like it's technology. This is something that we do. We can't get rid of it because it's part of being human. And whether it makes it worse or better, I don't know. It's always going to be here.
See, I also believe the same thing. I think faith will always, like religion will always be with it. Like this idea that I think that has taken hold, I think, in the last few years, particularly among people on the left, is that somehow we can eliminate religion. And I think it's a complete fool's game. It will never happen.
Right.
And people should just let go of that notion. And it doesn't mean that you're stupid to believe in God, which I found very interesting in the book, in the movie. Because there's quite often the fact that if you do have a faith, people just assume that you're not that educated or intelligent.
I find
that really offensive. And the movie makes that very clear.
Yeah.
That she's kind of offensive when she's talking to the Senate or whatever, the board.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She's kind of like snobby, like, oh, I'm better than the flyover states.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like to me.
And as someone who lives in a flyover state. No, it's like...
Yeah, it felt very relevant to today. Like, oh, you people with your guns and your God.
Yeah.
We're past that. And this movie said, we're not past that. We will never be past that. And both sides have to make... Like, faith and science, they have to make room for each other. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought the movie said.
You're absolutely right. You couldn't be more spot on. You are. It is a very 1990s message. It is a very 1990s approach to the relationship between science and religion. It's a very, very Carl Sagan, this is, science is better. And a lot of scientists do agree with that still today. Mm-hmm. Some very prominent scientists.
Yeah.
I personally don't. Science is a way of understanding the world around us. It's a particularly useful and powerful way of looking at the world mm-hmm. around us. And that's great. But like you said, religion is always going to be here.
Always.
People have faith for a reason. It gives value to their lives. Mm-hmm. And it is not our job as scientists, and I'm speaking very personally here, it's not our job as scientists.
And representing all scientists.
Representing every single scientist on the planet right now in this moment. Mm-hmm. It's not our job as scientists to displace beliefs. It's not our job to displace what people care about. It's our job to understand how the world works.
That's great.
That's it.
I mean, I think the movie did a really good job at kind of saying both, because it was really intense and negative about religion. There was plenty of imagery that was saying religion is bad and wrong, like you're saying, like when the priest comes and she's a kid even, and he tells her, like, hey, sometimes, you know, like God's will is mysterious. We don't know what happens. And she says, like, well, I should have kept the medicine downstairs and I would have got to him quicker. Like, a solution right away, But Matthew McConaughey's character, I think, is a rare character in
film.
Very
rare.
Who is, like, religious and really smart.
Not mock. Like, they don't sneer at him in the
It's because he's Matthew McConaughey. I mean, let's be honest. Because
today
they would sneer at that character.
Yeah, and we don't have that character really anymore, right? Like the advisor to the president who's looked at for all, it doesn't matter what they're talking about, he's one of the people they're going to discuss it with.
You know what? There is a character like that. I don't know if you guys watch nerdy TV shows.
I don't know what that means exactly.
The Expanse. It's a science
fiction show. I love The Expanse, yeah.
Okay, but there's...
It's great.
There's a character who is very religious.
Yeah, there is.
And she's very thoughtful. She's a major character. She's very sympathetic. Uh-huh. She's a major driver of the plot, and her views are important in the discussion of what's happening in that series.
Is that what's her face? Shamir Shahagal.
Yeah, Shamir Shahagal. One of my favorite actresses.
You know what else needs to do? Battlestar Galactica was a great series that dealt with that. Was about faith and reason.
Yes, absolutely.
And what I thought was great about that series was that everybody believed in God in that movie, and yet they were in space, and they were obviously thousands of years ahead of us.
Right.
And yet they all kind of
strong faith.
And, they all had faith.
Yeah.
And like Starbucks' journey was seen as kind of like a scientific journey, but it was also seen as a journey of like. Of faith and religion. It was my favorite show of all time.
Nice, Battlestar Galactica?
Well, yeah, because it brings the two things together.
Okay. And I've never seen it. Maybe I should check it out.
The reboot is brilliant.
The reboot.
Yeah.
So there's two.
Yeah, the first one was years ago, back in the 70s. I'm talking about the one that came out about 10, 15 years ago.
Oh, okay. Do you know about this?
I'm frowning at you.
You're frowning?
You really don't know Battlestar Galactica?
I have heard of the show. I didn't know there was two. I guess I just thought there was one.
The second one is so superior.
Very superior.
Oh, okay. Very superior. Okay. So I'm not going to bother with the first
one. It's one of the... it's one of the best television shows of all time.
Okay, I'm on it.
Nice. Solid.
Don't you think?
Really
and,
solid.
And one of the most ignored television shows of all time.
Well, forgotten.
But, like, Contact, I hadn't seen it since it first came out, but boy, it's a real essay.
I mean, yeah, it's long.
It's a video essay.
I think it holds up. I think it really, the effects, a lot of these movies from the 90s, the effects do not really hold up and they look a little, I don't know, it just takes you out of it when you see CGI sometimes. But I thought the movie was great. I thought all the wormhole visualization stuff was great.
We have no, like, wormholes to compare it to
in real life.
It's like whatever they put on screen is. Yeah, that's
it. Might have been the first time you ever saw that kind of thing, right? The wormhole travel.
Got to be one of the first.
I don't think I'd ever heard of it before then. Like, that's 21 years
ago. It's always spoken like obliquely. So the concept of wormholes was developed in the 70s.
Was it really?
A particular research paper by Kip Thorne, who recently won a Nobel Prize in physics, went out, you know, described wormholes and said, oh, and then at the end of the paper, you know, these can't exist in real life.
And did they actually come up with the idea that possibly that's a way to travel through space when you fold over space? That was when that was developed.
Exactly. This is
Einstein Rosen Bridge?
An Einstein Rosen Bridge.
That is
absolutely correct. Okay. So Einstein himself, with a dear friend of his and collaborator, and started sketching out these ideas, and then was fleshed out in the 70s by people like Kip Thorne.
Got you. Cool. Okay.
Is the science good in Contact? Doesn't make sense.
I will say before you answer that Carl Sagan wrote the book Contact. Yeah. They started it as a screenplay, but then it like took so long to make the movie that he made it into a book.
Yeah.
And then he was actually on production. He was like producing the movie and died during production. So he was making sure that the science was accurate.
Oh, and I just realized something.
Yeah.
Contact was not the only time that Matthew McConaughey has traveled through a wormhole.
That's right. Interstellar.
He was in Interstellar. Interstellar features a wormhole traveling through space and time.
But he doesn't travel in this one. It's Jodie.
Right.
So he was adjacent to a wormhole.
He was nearby.
His wormhole adjacent.
Wormhole adjacent. That's not. And then he got the bug.
I think that's exactly yeah, when Jodie.
Ever since that movie, he's like, yeah. I got to get in that.
This is for me. This is for me. I want that roller coaster in the moment.
Why does she get to do it? I don't get to.
Why does she get to do it? I thought it was a little funny, the whole idea that the world would choose. Not Sam Elliott. What was the name of the?
Oh, the old guy.
The old guy.
Drummond. That was the name of the movie.
Like, I'm like, there's no way. Maybe they would have, but I'm like, you're not going to send like an old guy like that.
And now, would the world send him, or would a bureaucratic panel send that?
Maybe 21 years ago. Maybe.
I think they kind of leaned on the fact that he was so powerful. He was so high up in the cabinet of whatever the hell that he kind of chose himself.
But would the world really step back and go and let the second person be an American too?
I mean, the second time.
I mean, really?
The second time
in 97? In 97?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
the second time it was more of like off the books, though. It didn't seem like it was much.
Oh, it was
like
all underground.
A media event.
But when they discover that they have the second.
It was indie.
But when they have the second. When they discover that they have the second machine.
Yeah.
The world knows.
I think they knew a little
before
bit
before John Hurt chooses her.
I don't quite remember. I think the world finds out later.
Yeah, I think she kind of knew secretively, and then. When it was approaching the day, they all kind of knew.
And do you think the Japanese would have allowed the Americans? I love the fact that the guy calling the shots is the same guy calling the shots in the first one.
Oh,
right? Yeah, why if these movies the same guy?
Dude, I couldn't believe how fast they kind of skimmed over stuff when it came to the actual
building.
Yeah, building of the
which would basically be impossible. Yeah.
It looks so impossible, and it's so fast into it. It's just automatically
montaged.
Like, here it is. We have the thing. We're gonna test it. They don't even test
it. Turns
the second
out that was really easy, man.
They don't even test the second. They only test it the first
time.
And would
they let the guy who's actually gonna be the astronaut be like feet from it? With a wrench?
He's right above it. He's on a crane.
This is what we do with space shuttles and everything.
I need to be here with a walkie-talkie.
I got to jimmy something out of here. Like, and that's what I thought was hilarious.
And we got a problem with the radiator. Come on.
Yeah. So silly, man. And they wouldn't let people nearby either. They don't know what the thing does.
No.
They don't know how fast it goes. They don't know what it's supposed to do.
No.
And you're going to let people just like watch it from...
Why would they even put a dummy in? Like, why does it have to be a dummy? It wouldn't have been a dummy.
Yeah.
It just could have been like a sack of flour.
A potato.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's configured for, you know.
Oh, maybe so. But it wasn't Jodie's body.
It wasn't Jodie's.
And it wasn't his body either.
It wasn't a body double.
Okay, I want to talk about a few other things that I thought were really crazy about the movie before we get into like super science-y stuff.
Okay.
So when they find the signal, okay, they get a weird like feed that's also video, right? And so she brings a TV over, then they're looking at the video.
Yeah, the Hitler.
And they have to like, they're like adjusting it, and then they realize it's a swastika, and then they kind of zoom out from the swastika, which is like they just happen to be zoomed in on this swastika.
How convenient.
And very convenient.
True.
And then they like just spin it a few times, and then it's just, it's Hitler talking.
Oh, Hitler talking.
And I couldn't, that to me.
Relevant again.
I mean, of course, still relevant. A lot of relevance.
Do you know how many times that happens to me watching a YouTube video?
Accidentally.
And I zoom out and I'm like, Hitler talking.
Hey, Hitler
come
again.
On. Come on.
Is it true that that was the very first broadcast?
I don't know.
There was a little fudge here. There was a little fudge.
Here we go.
Of course, there have been radio broadcasts.
Yeah.
That was the first worldwide TV broadcast where anywhere in the world, in principle, you could receive that signal. It was a very, very powerful.
The Germans did it before the Americans?
Well,
that's hard to believe.
Yeah, I don't like that.
The Germans were kind of on it for a while.
I'm Canadian. I like that.
All right. I just couldn't believe that whole scene seemed ridiculous to me. That there was only little moments that
stuck
out.
It's contrived. It's sending a message.
I understand that. But they also, right after that, realize that there's like hidden pages in the images.
Explain that to me.
What are you talking about?
What are they talking about?
What are they talking about? Well, trying to describe a fictional signal of which there is no actual information.
Here's what I'm thinking.
So when you watch a movie or a TV show, right. it's not one continuous thing. It's a bunch of frames.
I understand that.
That's what they got. They got frame interpreted to another frame, frame. They realized that between the frames,
they like inserted
there
information.
Was extra data.
But it goes so fast, you don't see it.
You don't see it. So okay. it almost like subliminal.
That makes sense.
There's this word for it. There's a word for it where you can put information.
Encryption?
It's
subliminal.
Not subliminal. Not. It's. Oh, what is it? Cryptophotography?
Crypto fascism?
Almost. So close.
Nomicon?
I think you're getting colder.
Someone Google Cryptonomicon.
it's where you can embed extra information inside.
I know exactly what
cryptogram.
Cryptogram.
Oh, we got there?
Oh, man. Man, I feel smart.
Are we right?
Marissa, cryptogram?
Is it text written in code?
Text written in code. Okay, okay. that sounds about right.
It's embedded.
So it's a picture, but there's extra information encoded in there.
But here's the thing. But if they're sending film, this is why I don't understand. The digital doesn't have that, does it?
Well, they're sending.
I don't know.
Well, this broadcast.
The broadcast was radio.
Was a radio signal. And so it's presumably the aliens heard this radio signal, recognized that, there's people in that solar system and they're emitting radio signals. The radio signal itself contains information, just like a radio broadcast.
So it can contain video information.
It can contain video information.
I didn't know that.
It's all bits. It's all bits. It's all data. It's about.
Oh, so it's not real. We're doing a bit.
It's all exactly.
So it just means that it's how it's read on the other side.
Exactly. It needs to be decoded. You encode into a signal and then you decode back to data.
Did it make sense when they fold it three-dimensionally? Because that was pretty cool.
That was cool.
And moment. I mean, you can arrange your data in any way you want.
Okay.
And
so that would work.
Still checks out.
Okay.
I mean, it's not like a Rubik's cube. Actually sit here with data and fold your hands. But no, you can slice up data. If you just have a bunch of bits, you don't know ahead of time how those bits need to be arranged against each other into form something coherent.
And how would they be able to read the aliens' like plans? Like I know mathematics is. I know mathematics is universal, isn't it? And it doesn't change.
We think.
Like maybe 2 + 2 doesn't equal 4 in another.
We don't have anyone else's notes to compare against.
Right. They made a very hard like reasoning for that though. They were saying math is the universal language. If the aliens do contact us,
that's how
they're doing it.
Yeah.
That might not be true.
It's hard to say. We think.
Because we have 2 arms and 2 legs that we.
I mean, our.
Talking about binary systems.
This is the basis of math, is the fact that we have 2 arms. We know it.
Yeah,
it was 1858.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily that our particular number system and way of doing math is universal, but math represents fundamental logical structures and relationships, and that might be universal. And then there's also physics that are universal. Go ahead.
Could the laws of physics be different in other places?
Other
planes?
As far as we can tell, because that's a valid thing to say. I mean, like, it's not necessarily true that the physics that we understand here on Earth, the forces and the particles and the constants, all that, apply all across the universe. Doesn't have to be true. And for a long, 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 long time, we didn't think it was true. But starting with the scientific revolution, starting with people like Kepler and Galileo, and then going into Newton, we realized step by step that the laws of physics are universal, that gravity here on Earth is gravity across the universe.
Yeah, it's like different amounts. The physics are different, but the way to measure it.
But the way we describe it, the way it behaves, the fundamental behavior is universal, and we test that constantly. Because if you can find a break, you can find a part of the universe or a time in the universe where physics is different. Mm-hmm. That's like instant Nobel Prize. That's huge.
Scott, I'm going to work on that.
I was going to say.
You know, let's collaborate. Like let's collaborate. So, my people will call your people. My people are grad students. Your people are managers.
That's how I'm doing.
Magic.
Okay, well, speaking of like super zooming out here universe-wise, contact, one out of 10. Oh. I just want to know how you got, how much you guys like enjoyed the
movie.
Oh,
I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
Very much, actually. Eight.
Eight from Scott Thompson.
I was going to give it an eight, too.
Yeah.
Eight.
I think that's about right.
Perfect. Like, my perfect science fiction film would be Close Encounters of the Third
Ooh.
Kind.
Right.
That's like my favorite of all science fiction, because I love science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But this was damn close. I just think I would have liked a little more humanity from her. I would have liked a little more. Maybe.
Do you feel like she was a caricature?
A little bit, yes. I didn't know if she was actually a real person.
Have you met any other scientists besides me in your life?
No.
Okay. I'm just wondering.
So you thought she was? I mean, she was a really good portrait of a scientist.
No, not at all. She wasn't.
Because I just don't buy that all scientists are completely cut off from their emotions.
But considering her history,
well, her history is pretty
brutal.
Okay, it's brutal,
yeah. Which is incidental. Is it? Incidental to her being a scientist, or was it essential to her becoming a scientist?
I say essential.
I would say essential as
and
well.
And I'd say essential to the kind of scientist she became.
Right.
And the devotion. I think she would have become a scientist anyways, even if both parents had lived, but because they died, especially because of the daddy.
Yeah.
You don't, nothing more powerful than that.
Yeah.
I think that's right. What the movie's saying. There is nothing more powerful than looking for daddy or mommy.
Yeah. I mean, she runs out of the bed first night, Matthew McConaughey, going right back to work.
I mean, they are
that's
explicit
committed.
Explicit.
Yeah.
In this
is
movie.
Daddy issues.
Yeah. This isn't just daddy. This is,
oh,
this
man.
Is daddy.
She says this.
Explicit.
He says the same line that the dad said like 10 minutes prior. And then that's when she is you know, smitten.
Like they don't dance. They don't dance around that at
all.
They
so
just
true.
Literally go. Your partner is what your parent.
Yeah.
Boom.
And you like that.
And you like it.
And then the aliens are going to come and be like, "Oh, you like this daddy stuff."
Oh yeah, you're right. It's all about the dad. So
like,
true.
We're gonna double down.
Yeah. Okay, we're gonna take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go back to the show about science.
Okay, so one other thing, the suicide pill was controversial in this movie. They didn't like because they give her this little, you know, black pill in a glass capsule, and they say that all the astronauts have been doing this since the missions began. NASA
like
missions,
the Apollo program, and all that.
Yeah.
Is that not true?
So Carl Sagan claims that they were. If astronauts were, you know, unable to return to Earth or they found themselves in some crazy situation, they would take this pill. But then Jim Lovell came out, who was the commander of the Apollo 13, and said that this is not true. So I wanted to ask.
You, I have no insider information on NASA.
Damn.
It would really surprise me if the American space program had a suicide pill.
Okay.
Because that would, to me, would go against American ideals, because especially then, I just think that this is a religious country, and I don't buy it.
And especially a lot of the early astronauts were very religious, and many modern day astronauts
I think they
were very religious.
Insulted, and I don't. There's no way John Glenn had a suicide pill.
Plus, I mean, how many ways can you quickly kill yourself in space? You don't need a pill.
There
probably.
Are a significant number of ways.
That is
and painlessly,
true.
Too.
Yeah.
That you just float off and you just fall asleep and then you
And
die.
I'm sure they're very aware of exactly 100%. What those are.
And I don't think, and that's a great point about like American ethos.
Yeah.
Also, I think Soviet ethos
I
is
bet
like,
the
you're
Chinese,
not going to kill yourself.
I think you get a suicide pill.
You're
going to
live or you're going to die trying, Buster.
Like, wait, whatever. Just get a suicide pill in China.
Yeah.
Like, if it's a bad, you know, bad order and they're really rude,
take this, do what you want.
Your credit rating is ruined anyways.
We're not tell you what to do, but you know, it's there as an option.
It's there for you.
Yeah.
So she's made fun of
godless China. I just wanted to know we're talking about godless China.
No, I wanted to discuss it here on the podcast. That was my main.
I'm glad we segued to that.
Huge red letters, godless China. So I'm glad you brought it up. She's made fun of for looking for aliens in the movie, like 3-4 times towards the beginning.
Yeah.
Even though this program, SETI, is all about looking for extraterrestrials,
and also made fun of.
Yeah.
So, right, that's what I was going to ask you, basically. Like, is that a common thing that scientists will make fun of each other because they're looking for something that is not yet proven?
That's a really tough one. So, one, scientists make fun of each other all the time. And we constantly go to conferences and say, well, your research is useless. All the funding should go to me, of course. Right. Like, that's the standard discourse among scientists.
Got it.
SETI is very, very interesting and very, very tough from a scientific point of view. Because in the 50s and 60s and maybe 70s and 80s, we honestly don't know how common are aliens. Are we alone? Are we awash in radio alien signals right now?
Right.
We just haven't listened carefully enough.
Right.
And so it's totally valid, totally valid. Mm-hmm. But decade after decade after decade of absolutely no signal, decade after decade after decade of no signs whatsoever of alien intelligence in a number of different ways we've actively searched, it starts to become untenable. That, like, you know what? Maybe we're just not going to find it and we can spend our money somewhere else.
I would argue the opposite.
Go for it. Here we go.
Because also in the last 20, 30 years, we've discovered more and more how much more vast the universe is and how much more life, how easy life can spring up. We've discovered life at the bottom of the ocean living on on vents, and we might have discovered bacteria on Mars, etc. And we now know that there are literally trillions of not just planets but universes, and we also know now that there are probably billions of planets that are from the right distance from a sun like ours to support life. So to me, yes, we have been looking and listening for a long time, we've heard nothing, but we also know that there is so much more nothing out there, and that it might just be that we just haven't come across them yet. So I think they kind of balance each other out.
You are absolutely, you're two for two.
There you go.
This is awesome.
We are going to collaborate. China.
This is amazing.
And to Scott's point, I just want to add in that there has been some alien discoveries.
This week.
That's what I'm both about.
We're talking about the sale this week.
I was alluding to.
Doctor, let's talk about the sale.
Let me reinforce Scott's point because he made an excellent, excellent point.
Yeah.
Which is the search for life outside the Earth is not over, but it has changed tone and changed character. It's less about passive listening for radio signals. That seems like it's just not going to work, honestly.
Okay.
But now it's much more active. It's hunting for exoplanets, planets orbiting other stars. Yeah. It's hunting for developing the technologies to observe the atmospheres of those planets to look for oxygen. Oxygen in an atmosphere is a sign of photosynthesis, the sign of life. It's much more active. So tons of interest, exoplanets, major growing field in astronomy. Tons of people are moving in
and
that
direction.
And
they're not mocked, those scientists.
Not mocked at all. But the SETI, the passive, let's wait for radio stuff, that has been declining. It's just not interesting because it hasn't been fruitful. Now, with this sale stuff.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Good.
Are we talking about the Oumuamua?
Oumuamua.
Yeah, I've never said it.
Oumuamua.
Oumuamua.
It's a Hawaiian word means scout.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Can you say it one more time for me?
Oumuamua.
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 Oumuamua. It's a fun word to say. Don't name your daughter that because we'll confuse it for the interstellar asteroid that transit through this. Oumuamua.
It is fun to say.
What's your feeling about it?
So check this out. So I've actually been doing interviews all week with journalists. I was on the Weather Channel a couple of mornings ago talking about this because a couple Harvard astrophysicists, including Avi Loeb, who is a colleague of mine. I'm pretty sure I've written a paper with him. I don't honestly remember. He's the chair of the Harvard Astrophysics Department.
Right. Okay.
Very prominent scientist, wrote a paper saying, okay, this interstellar object that passed through our solar system a year ago and is currently on its way out did something funny. After it passed the sun and started going on its way out, it appears maybe that it sped up.
Yeah.
Just a little bit, a little bit. Yeah. And we're not quite sure. It's a very, very fuzzy measurement. We don't have good data here at all.
Okay.
So what can speed rocks up? Well, the most obvious thing is outgassing. We've all experienced outgassing. Comets do it too. They just squirt out a little bit of gas.
Comet farting.
A comet farting. Exactly. I'm glad you said it so I can maintain my integrity.
Your decorum. You're prestigious.
This outgassing event. It's like a little rocket. It's like, it goes out and it speeds up. So that's the natural hypothesis. That's the first thing. But we don't have any direct observations, like to see like the gas that came out.
Right. Okay.
So it's a little bit confusing. A mystery of the universe.
Right.
Okay, welcome to astronomy.
Right, right.
And this paper went through, okay, what are some other possible explanations for it? You know, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. We crunched some numbers. And then option number 8 in the paper was, oh, maybe it's an alien spacecraft and they built a light sail and the radiation pressure from the sun itself is accelerating the spacecraft. Okay. Blew up in the news.
It did.
The astrophysicists were very quick to jump on the phone with journalists and say, oh, no, no, we're not saying it's aliens, of course, but, you know, we can't rule it out, can we?
Is that how they talk, by the way?
That is exactly how they talk.
They all smoke cigarettes?
Very sinister, very, you know, Hollywood tycoon, 1950s kind of vibe.
Cool.
Very, it's typical astrophysicists.
Do they rub their hands with glee?
Oh, yeah, and they're, like, you know, very greasy. And they're just like,
the phone rings?
I'm not saying.
Twist their little goatees.
It's the very little tiny,
ones,
pointy,
very long ones.
Yes, yes, it's waxed, and
do they peer over the edges of their glasses as they're twisting their?
You
goatees?
Know what? Academia is a little bit out. It's still monocles. We're still monocles in the academia world.
I wish you guys could see Scott doing it.
It's very accurate. It's amazing. Yeah,
they should know. I'm looking over my glasses
and squinting
with disdain at the UN committee. Going, I know because I've been there, and that's
yes.
all I say.
Yeah. And he can walk out.
Yes.
My
calculations say that it's true. So that's why.
Wow. If you guys need a
that's it.
Maniacal astrophysicist character.
Can we move on? Thank you, please. I'm sorry.
This is great. I can watch it all day.
Oumuamua.
Oumuamua.
So what's your feeling about Oumuamua?
It's not a light sail.
Why is that? You don't.
Well, here's the thing. Here's my objection to the paper and the thing I've been telling
right.
you know, journalists and
right.
everything is the aliens did it.
Right.
Is not a valid scientific hypothesis.
Okay.
Because once you introduce intelligence, once you have an intelligent creature that can manipulate their mm-hmm. environment, they can do anything they want. And because they can do anything they want, they can construct
right.
anything they want, they can design whatever they want, you can explain any observation.
Right.
It's like unfair.
It's unfair.
Yeah.
It's every
right. okay.
single observation can be explained. Every single mystery in the universe.
You can explain why Trump was elected. It was alien intervention.
That
there
makes
it
more
is.
Sense
there
than
is. You
what happened?
Yeah. So there it, like you can explain anything mm-hmm. with alien intervention, which means I can't test it.
Right,
I can't
right.
test it. I can't like, falsify it,
yeah.
which means it's no longer science.
What I didn't understand was they said that as it reached the limit of our solar system,
mm-hmm.
it sped up, and people said it was because of the sun. That made no sense to me because wouldn't that mean it was much further away from the sun? So why would it get more speed if
that's,
it was so
that's
far
part of
away
the, that's
the
part
sun?
Of the mystery. That's part of the mystery. We honestly
that's
don't know.
Anti-solar power.
Yeah. That's what I mean. That's anti-solar power.
Yeah.
We honestly don't understand the behavior of Oumuamua. It is a mystery, and
right.
it's too far gone. We're never going to get another bit of data ever again from it. So it's it. That's it.
Right.
We don't know.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you're allowed to say aliens may have did it, because
right.
you can't test
what
that
about the
hypothesis.
Pyramids?
See, it's the exact same thing. It's the exact same thing.
Like, nothing to do with contact, by the way. Just
can't,
curious.
We can't rule out that aliens did it, and we did some math in a paper, so, you know, we're going to leave it there. No,
yeah.
you're not allowed, because you can't test it, you can't falsify it. And so that is... everything. My objection
okay.
to that. It's just
that makes sense. That's
yeah, that makes
good
sense.
Scientists.
Even if
yeah,
here's
okay,
here's the mind blowing thing. Even if it was aliens,
even if you couldn't
even,
say
the,
it?
Even if yeah,
why?
Yeah,
why?
Even if it actually is a solar sail,
right?
We don't have any evidence, and so I can't make that claim.
So you are
I can't
like
make
Jodie
that
Foster.
Statement. I am totally
want
Jodie
to,
Foster.
You would you want?
You know, my
you,
dad did pass a few years ago.
Oh,
so
did you
sorry,
want it
sir.
To be aliens? I mean, you know,
signs of intelligent life in our universe that we're not alone. That would be amazing.
Is that your
amazing.
Big dream?
No, my big dream is to win the Nobel Prize.
For but, what?
For anything. I'll take peace.
Oh,
yeah, they're passing
take,
that out like candy.
It's like Oscar. I'll win an Oscar
matter.
For anything.
Okay,
wardrobe, costume.
I'll do
anything.
It. Yeah, it's
yeah.
like I'll take it. I'll
yeah.
I'll fly to.
Yeah,
I'll
I designed
fly to
that
Stockholm.
Hat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. I'll get the medal. It's all good. I don't care.
It
no,
would be good.
I'm.
That would be cool. So, in case you guys are radio freaks like Jodie Foster was in the movie, and you're curious about
Oumuamua,
it did not. give out any radio signals.
No, SETI
they
checked.
They scanned it. Yeah.
They're like, hey, Amumu, you got anything? Okay. And Amumu is like, shut up, I'm going to
Yeah,
walk.
But what about Mars? There's
what
bacteria
about Mars?
Yeah, let's talk about
that was discovered in the dark more than 1,900 feet underground and has given hope that alien life can thrive on Mars, scientists announced. You're a scientist. Scientists in Spain.
I'm among the people.
They found tiny, I'm going to say this wrong, cyanobacteria.
Cyanobacteria. Oumuamua cyanobacteria.
Wait. Those are not related.
Oh, no. This is, oh, okay.
This is on Mars. They found tiny cyanobacteria, which have apparently evolved to survive in total darkness.
Why would you call bacteria tiny when it already is tiny by definition?
Maybe it's
Are you talking about bacteria that's extra tiny?
I guess they are.
Or yeah. It's just emphasizing. I mean, because
bacteria is tiny.
Because there's a chance.
From what I understand.
There's a chance, because you have to write science articles at fifth grade level for the public. Right. There's a chance you may not have encountered the word bacteria.
Well, people think you can see bacteria with your eye.
Or just don't know, what is that word? What does that mean? And you say tiny bacteria. I'm making it this up. You say tiny bacteria.
Bacteria microscopic?
Yes. But you can say, I don't know
you
what a
bacteria. Tiny microscopic particles.
Yeah, it sounds silly.
I say that all the time. In my science writing, I'm always going minuscule particle.
It's just to stress how small it is.
Just to stress. It's
Less
punch it up.
Always less adjectives. That's my advice for everything.
Oh, okay.
Always less adjectives. And I think that's even in the movie. Don't they make a speech about adjectives? Doesn't somebody
do
make
really?
A speech about adjectives?
I'm all about the adjectives. I will string five adjectives together.
I find scientists, when they write papers, use too many adjectives.
Okay. Well maybe you can edit
really
my next
submission.
Yeah,
you guys are like the yin and the yang here.
This is very good.
Papers.
Well, we're going to collaborate, so it's cool.
Less is more. Yeah.
And more is even more.
And two adjectives is embarrassing.
So you're getting writing tips here from Scott Thompson. I didn't think.
Well, I love that you're a great writer. So
I like writing a lot, and it's very mathematical. I find.
Oh,
formulaic.
Well, I find when you put it together, and then it's like, oh, it can't be any other way. Maybe it's not scientific, but
the pieces
fit. You feel it in here.
You're gesturing.
He's pointing
all over.
To his torso. Guys.
I was going to say my brain, but I know that that's not really It's not really a brain thing.
It's a heart thing.
It's a heart
putting
thing.
The puzzle together.
Yeah.
That's a palpitation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you think that Jody?
Take your time.
I mean, it's fascinating because the whole movie is really just about trying to find her father, and to find. It's almost like she dies. Isn't it the movie kind of like...
And it's like she's reborn.
Well, that's what I'm wondering.
Interesting.
I mean, in some ways you could read the movie. I'm just spitballing here. That it actually is not a repudiation of science, but it's actually saying that she does die. She goes to the afterlife. She does see her father.
She acquires faith.
She does it because she does acquire faith.
And it's through a personal encounter, coming to grips with her father and the importance of it and how it shaped her life, and maybe you need to let some things go.
Yeah.
She seems more at peace at the end. I will give you that.
She's chill.
Do you think that Sagan would have liked that conclusion?
Sagan wrote it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He did write that part?
I think.
I think the ending was different. I'm not sure exactly how.
Do you think Sagan came
switched.
To believe in God because he was dying when he wrote the movie?
Now that's an interesting question.
I'm pretty sure I wasn't there. And I don't know Andrew Yin, his wife.
Right.
I'm pretty sure he remained an atheist.
He did.
Until.
But
until
he's definitely given religion a shot, because there's a lot of messages in the movie that I found to be promoting spiritualism.
I thought so. And also, to me, it was saying that maybe he was talking about himself. I thought maybe he's saying that I should have been a little less of a hard-ass scientist.
Somewhere
in my
maybe.
Life,
that
maybe I should have loved a little more.
And I think that message is lost on a lot of people who are fans, remember Carl Sagan, remember, and look up to the major science communicators like Neil deGrasse Tyson today. Mm-hmm. I feel like, because I'm having a realization here, because I try very hard to be nice. To be welcoming.
Civilians, you mean?
To you know, the hoi polloi.
You can say it.
I was going to say hoi polloi. You know, the proletariat.
Hoi
polloi. The serfs.
Yeah, the great unwashed.
Yeah, exactly. The masses. of to be, to acknowledge that not everyone is going to agree with me.
Yes,
and,
right.
That's cool. It's okay. We can still have dinner together. We can still have fun together. We can still experience this life together. And and I didn't realize that about the ending of Contact, that there may have been this message that, be nice.
I thought so, yeah.
Like, absolutely.
Kindness. That's really cool. That's
really
cool.
Saying that kindness was like,
yeah, and just
love
understanding
was
people.
The missing link, which is what a lot of
also Interstellar,
movies do.
Also Interstellar is like
which,
love.
Which did it in such a ham-handed way. Like, I thought Interstellar was a ham-handed.
Yeah, that was pretty heavy. Contact. That was pretty heavy.
A lot of ham.
Yeah, a lot of ham. A lot of bad science in that, like pork, in the wall and everything.
But also a lot of great science in that. I mean, we can
yes,
do another.
And a lot, and beautiful.
Yes, like, yes, yes.
Gorgeous. Beautiful movie.
Which they, can I comment something about the beauty of Interstellar?
Yeah. Please.
So the scene of the black hole.
Yes.
With that giant black hole with the accretion disk.
Yes.
That scene, the generation, the VFX to make that scene, the CGI, led to genuine research papers because they used accurate physics to paint that. And with Hollywood money, they were able to spend more money and use more powerful computers to accurately represent it than the scientists have ever been able to acquire. And so they spent more money and resources to make that scene, and it led to genuine science.
Wow. It makes total sense, and yet it's still, like, shocking and disappointing.
It
you know,
really
is. Like, science should have way more money than Hollywood, but, but that's not the case. This movie was $90 million, the budget.
What, for Contact?
Yeah.
That's a lot, though.
That seems like a lot.
Yeah,
that's
it feels
a lot.
Like a ton of money.
That's a lot of money.
I could use $90 million.
Jeez. Like, if I said, if I said, right, you're getting a grant for $90 million to study whatever the hell it is, wouldn't you say, that's incredible.
That's like
an immense grant.
That's like a couple permanent faculty lines plus grad students and postdocs for decades.
For decades.
That's, how is that how it works? Is like what she did, like to get the money? Is that what they have to do? Is that what something you guys have to do? You have to go around and kind of like pitch people and
she had a great pitch, by the way.
She had a
great
good pitch. It's a lot like show business.
Yep.
You're pitching shows to producers.
I mean, Jodie Foster is doing your pitch.
She felt a lot like an actor's life.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, or
auditioning.
A creator's life.
Yes.
Like going, I got this idea and I need your money.
You got to believe
in
this.
You got to kind of prostitute yourself a little bit.
Here's why I believe in it. Yeah, yeah.
That is exactly it.
So there is a lot of that.
You pitch funding agencies. You pitch. NASA will have an open call. Okay, folks, we got $10 million this year. We're going to divvy it up between four or five projects.
One-ninth of Contact's budget. Yeah,
what do you got?
Yeah.
And then every sign. And here's what we're looking for. You know, here's what we think is trending.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, here's what the direction we'd like to move in. What do you got? And you got 3 months to send us proposals, pitches. And it's and then every scientist at every research institute who wants a little piece of that pie writes up a proposal like here's what I've done in the past, here's why I'm, you know, the best person for the job,
right.
Here's what I plan to do, here's how I'm going to spend the money, here's how I'm going to allocate it, boom, and it goes to a committee. And the committee reviews all the applications and scores them and weights them. And then there's a bunch of petty politics in the background.
Love
and then
that.
Here's the awards, 1, 2, 3, 4. Each of you are getting 3/4 of what you asked for. Good luck, folks.
Wow.
That's it. That's
and like we're all looking for a mad billionaire.
Right.
To finance our project.
Yes.
There's been a shift.
Lorne Michaels or Elon Musk.
Because,
you know?
No, exactly. Because a lot of federal funding has been flat or declining for about 2-3 decades now in the physical sciences. And there's just as many faculty out there. There's more grad students. There's more postdocs fighting over smaller and smaller pies. And so there's been an interesting rise in private funding of places like the Simons Foundation.
Right.
Or the Gates Foundation, who are spending money
on
fundamental research with no guarantee of return.
Well, speaking of, there's the SETI, let me see if I'm getting this right. SKA is how I would read it, but I'm a musician.
We're going to say SKA.
Okay, I'm going to say SKA.
We're going to say SKA.
The SKA.
Thank
Scott's
you.
Looking at me like I'm a
maniac. I would say SKA too.
You
would. Because I used to really like SKA music.
Thank you, Scott.
We're going to say SKA.
I knew we would bond.
Yeah,
I like SKA.
I miss SKA, actually. I think the world needs a little more SKA.
Yeah,
is it time? Is it time for a SKA surgeon?
I totally.
How has that not happened already?
It is kind of crazy.
Okay,
it's time.
So we all agree on that.
Yes.
SKA is SKA, sorry, buddy, is the square kilometer array. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, it's a bunch of satellites, radio
dishes
that are
antenna
trying
on the ground.
To be built. And there's also the EELT, and I'm not making this up, Scott, the European Extremely Large Telescope.
Really? That's so
We have amazing names. We have amazing.
I know you love adjectives.
Where is it? It's probably like in a really tiny country, like Liechtenstein or something. Biggest telescope, smallest country.
So they're planning.
That would be interesting.
It's scheduled to begin in 2019 for initial observations by 2022, but the construction budget is not secured at this stage, which I guess is typical of this kind of BS, political red tape. But I guess Australia or South America or South Africa. Yeah. So they're looking at one of the two places to start building this
square kilometer array.
This square kilometer array, the SKA. So maybe it is a resurgence, just not the way that we want it.
It rebranded.
Yeah.
Because it's 2018. Okay. It's just you can't totally rehash. You have to give it a fresh
spin. It's less brass. But it's a lot of dishes, which is cool.
So it's a lot of metal. It's more metal.
More
metal themed.
So this is basically a big telescope, right?
A bunch of telescopes.
Working together? Is that what they do?
Exactly.
And it's supposed to...
Can I drop a science word?
Oh, yeah. Come on.
A big array of radio antenna like that is called an interferometer.
Oh.
Now we're talking.
An interferometer.
Interferometer.
Because they interfere with each other on purpose.
Oh, okay.
To make the signal stronger.
It's like... Yeah, exactly. It's as if you have... Here we go. If you have two antenna...
Yeah.
Or two dishes very far apart, and you set it up as an interferometer. It's as if you had a single giant dish spanning that distance.
Cool.
So you get a lot of science.
How far will they be able to see?
Well, it depends on the wavelengths. The square kilometer array, which is an array taking up the area of 1 square kilometer, so large and very self-descriptive, it will see some of the first stars and galaxies to be born in the universe. That's a distance of around 35 to 40 billion light years away.
Oh, that's cool.
Yikes.
That's good stuff.
That's cool.
That's good stuff.
Do they let normal people see stuff like that?
Absolutely not.
No.
No.
Even a person with a lot of money, or what about someone who doesn't have a lot of money but had a show that people loved?
You know what?
And really affected a lot of scientists when they were young.
You know what?
And they really want to like curry favor with this comedian.
You know what? I like this soft pitch, and you know what? I'm getting it, and so I'll talk to some people.
Good, because that's what I'm.
Because
I'm
I can't get any. Either,
we should have an answer by Monday. It sounds like.
Yeah.
So I want to play a quick game with you guys,
right.
If that's all right. Called Viva Las Vegas.
Viva Las Vegas.
Okay. Oh yeah, of course. That's the audience should know that was the name of the alien planet.
The star.
The system.
The star. Yes.
The star.
Exactly.
They called it something else, presumably.
Yeah.
The aliens.
Yeah,
There's a lot of... We need to respect. Yeah.
Too. And it said Viva Las Vegas on like the Elvis impersonator's guitar.
That was a ridiculous scenario.
Yes.
When they were going through... Way too long.
So long.
We get it.
Yeah.
We get it. It's a carnival.
Cool. It's like Burning Man.
And every single person was just peaking with whatever
totally different
thing they were doing.
100%.
Yeah, Zemeckis definitely shouted out, like, if you're pretending to be on drugs, you're out of 10 right now, dude. You've got to be tripping
hilarious.
Out.
And her looking out, like, I had no idea.
I had no idea people would be interested in this.
Yeah. And, like, also the fact that when she leaves the hearing and she's all by herself, she's the most famous woman in the world.
Yeah.
And she sees him standing off, and he's the second most famous person. In the world, and they're looking at each other, and no one's going, it's them!
Holy shit, guys!
Get to run and hug each other. I'm spitting on him. I'm so excited about that. Because that was hilarious.
Yeah, very good. So, yeah, Vega is where she hears the signal. And
the
Hitler alien signal, which now makes the movie sound
which is
so
different
ridiculous.
Than an alien Hitler signal.
Oh yeah.
Do you think the aliens would have thought that was because that they were going to be like, maybe we don't really need to see these people? Would they have any concept of what they were watching? Do you think?
I guess the assumption is in the movie that they either didn't care, or did not understand the context of what was going down in that video, because there were a lot of
the language, then they would have sent back English stuff.
Yeah, probably. Because they could have just waited like a couple years, and they would have got something like
I Love Lucy,
or Mr. Rogers, you know, a little bit more wholesome.
Nicer.
And they just had to wait. They could say, "Well, okay, let's give these humans let's give them a little bit of time.
Before
we send the magic."
Debut album didn't like it that much.
Let's see what the sophomore.
Yeah, but this King Friday guy, he seems pretty nice.
He's got something. Okay, so Vega, arguably the next most important star in the sky after the sun. Mm-hmm. Vega was the northern pole star around 12,000 BC and will also be the northern pole star again in the year 13,727. Does that sound right?
This is true science facts.
Are you being sarcastic with me?
I know it's hard to tell sometimes. I am not.
Okay, all right. I just want to make sure I have my information correct, because oftentimes
the North
I don't.
Pole, so the Earth wobbles. Right. Is this one of your trivia questions?
And I'm No. Okay. This is just an intro to Vega.
And I can't resist explaining Please. This. The Earth wobbles in its orbit. So our North Pole very, very slowly moves in a circle around the sky. Right now, it's lined up with a star called Polaris, mm-hmm. but it wasn't true. The ancient Egyptians had a different North Pole than we do today. And thousands of years from now...
Give me a different North Pole.
As in the North Pole of the Earth, the axis of the Earth pointed in a different spot on the sky.
Oh.
And it was close. I forget the name of the star. It wasn't Vega for them, but mm-hmm. it was another star. Mm-hmm. They had a different star that they identified as the North Pole.
Wow.
That's
okay.
how we name things.
So I have a couple trivia questions. And I feel like he's going to know
I'm sure.
most of them.
I'm well, stressed out because I'm not an astronomer, though, so I don't know these.
I hope to stump you. That would be ideal, I think. But I'll ask you first. You'll answer first. So how big is Vega compared to the sun?
I think it was a similar size.
Similar size. Dr. Paul Sutter.
I'm going to say significantly larger.
Wow. Okay. Vega is only about a tenth of
significantly smaller.
Well, hold on a second. A tenth of the age of the sun.
Yes. Oh.
But it is two times as massive.
Oh. So
so it's like 40% greater in radius?
Yep. That sounds about right.
Okay, fine.
Okay.
Okay. You know different. What? It's not significantly larger. You know what? We're both wrong. It's cool.
Yeah, we're both wrong. Yeah.
But close. I mean, not crazy.
Neither one of us were catastrophically wrong.
Exactly. I think you were closer than me.
I might have been a little closer.
You were right.
Who's
I'll give
counting?
It to you.
Yeah.
I'll give it one for Scott.
One for Scott. I love how this is starting out. How many light years away from the sun is Vega?
Oh.
Which is basically like saying light years from Earth, too, right? Because
I mean, basically.
Years, okay.
It wasn't far. 7.2?
Ooh. Okay.
Whoa, did you...
No, it was just, I didn't expect such an exact number, that's all.
That is very precise.
7.2,
wow.
I was like,
amazing.
Wow, sounds like
precision.
He really knows what the fuck he's talking about.
I'm getting ballpark 40.
40, okay, kind of in the middle of both of you. It was 25,
okay.
Relatively close.
Closer, though.
But, okay.
25 light years from the sun. Okay.
I knew it wasn't a lot.
Which is pretty close for a star, so you were right about that.
I knew it was very close. I remember them saying it was very close.
They're not next door neighbor, they're like down the street.
Because she was like going on about it's impossible. They were going on about it's impossible, it's too close.
Yeah.
They
like, yeah.
To develop and all this bullshit. Oh, yeah. I dismissed it immediately.
I
think
you remembered a lot of it.
I think you wrote the Wikipedia synopsis of this movie.
Well, I did. I watched it last night.
Oh, great. Great. So did I.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I really like it. Sorry.
No, me too. I was really surprised, actually, how much
I was surprised at how serious it was.
By the way,
it's very serious.
Did you guys tear up a little contact?
No.
No.
Okay. It didn't get me emotionally.
Okay.
No.
I got a little bit with the dad towards the beginning.
No, maybe at the
beginning. The music is so good.
At the beginning, but not at the end.
Alan Silvestri with the music.
At the
really
end,
got
I did
me.
Not. No.
It lost its. Yeah, it's very analytical.
I'm a sucker for the music. That's the thing. I could listen to like just a score. I'll probably tear up.
Okay.
Yeah, I wanted to, but I did not. No, I didn't. I didn't really get upset.
Okay. What constellation is Vega a part of?
Oh, jeez.
Got him good with this one, guys.
Yeah. What constellation?
Oh, no. This is bringing me back to my quiz team days.
Ursa Minor.
Dr. Paul Sutter.
I'm going to say Lyra, the Lyre.
That is correct.
Okay.
Lyra, the Lyre is correct.
And the Lyre is in the musical
in the
instrument,
movie, don't they?
I don't think that they do.
Maybe they don't.
I'm not sure if they do, but there is a constellation.
I just know facts about space.
I know, but you're not an astronomer.
But I'm not an astronomer. I'm an astrophysicist.
Well,
but
I know
a couple things.
But don't you remember when the father points out? No, that was about Venus.
Oh, right. Yeah. You're right. Venus, Vega. Come on.
Yeah, that's what
basically
it was.
Basically the same thing.
Yeah. But they show a constellation like four different times in the movie, and it's the same one, which is kind of cool, but I don't even know if it is symbolic or do
you know
what
it means? So that's the one where they go like this? That's the archer, right?
There's
Lyra, they're playing the Lyra.
Lyra is super tiny. It's a very small constellation. There's just like five stars in it, and Vega's the brightest.
Yes. That's what I was going to say also. Vega's the brightest star. But yeah, there's four. In the movie, there's like a constellation of four, and you see it with like the moons at one point, and then you see it when he picks up the sand.
Oh, yeah.
And then towards the end, when she picks up the dirt.
Okay, yeah.
It's like a few times there's this same thing, and I was trying to put it together, and I just don't know what it's in
reference
to. Yeah, I don't
know.
Maybe like, everything's connected. I don't know what it is exactly.
Everything's connected.
Okay, let's just go with that. It's the fifth brightest star in the night sky and the second brightest star in the northern celestial hemisphere. So
For us. We're in. For listeners in the northern hemisphere is your second brightest star.
For Australians,
it not so much.
Screw them.
Yeah.
We don't really care what's the brightest thing
in
the
star. Which is in
general. Because obviously it's Kylie Minogue.
Yeah.
And we know, right? And there's no discussion.
And who's second? Nobody cares.
We don't care. Olivia Newton-John, maybe. But really, it's Kylie, number one.
All right. When was, this is a year question. What year was Vega first photographed?
What year?
Yeah.
But the movie's, it's fiction.
It's all about audio, but there was a photograph taken of Vega at some point. They didn't say it in the movie.
54.
Interesting.
I'm going to say 1890.
Even older than what you're saying, but you are much closer. 1850.
Wow. Oh.
Vega became the first star, other than the sun, to be photographed when it was imaged by William Bond and John Adams Whipple at the Harvard College Observatory with a, and I'm going to say this wrong for sure, daguerreotype?
Daguerreotype.
Daguerreotype. Like those old box.
The precursor to the photograph.
Yeah.
So it wasn't photographed, it was daguerreotyped.
It was daguerreotyped.
I'm going to catch you on a technicality there, Alex.
Please.
No, it was daguerreotyped.
Daguerreotyped.
Yeah, I just found that fascinating because I couldn't believe that they captured an image of something so far away with that old box. I guess, yeah, super bright.
And you just go out at night.
And you got it.
And you just wait. You just expose. Mm. Not yourself. You expose
the
photo. I mean, you could do both at the same time because you're alone in the
woods.
Where
was the first nude picture of Whipple taken? Whoa. Is that his name, right? Whipple?
That's his name.
I think he sent the first, he sexted. I think he was,
he was the first one.
He took a picture of his junk and then he took a picture.
With his daguerreotype.
Yeah.
Well,
that's where Whipple comes from.
Well, there's the story of Anton Leeuwenhoek and the microscope.
Oh, yes. He's the guy. Of course, I know who that is.
Right.
The
guy who invented the microscope, the very first thing he looked at was his own skin.
Come.
What?
Yeah.
Is that true?
It's true. It's 100% true.
What's his name?
Leeuwenhoek.
Leeuwenhoek.
It's Dutch, right?
Is it W?
Leuwenhoek or something.
Actually.
Really, I have no idea. But I know it's a Dutch name, and it's really hard to spell and pronounce.
And do you know so much about this because this fact is so outrageous, or do you have?
It's pretty outrageous.
I know all facts about cum.
That's what I was trying to get at.
I know you were trying to get at
come
that.
Out and say.
I honestly
but
don't know why I know it. I just know that he had the first microscope,
the first thing he looked at.
And it was cum.
You know,
it
would look really cool if I came right now. And
I think they might have even taught me in school that it was cum.
Wow.
They
different
may have
time.
Said that. I went to a Catholic school, so
I don't know. I think to Canadian regular school, so
Canadian
they
regular school.
They would have just said, it's semen, get with it.
I went to regular school. They never talked about that.
They said semen grow up.
Semen grow up day one. That was your first class. Okay, last question.
Canadian school, semen grow up.
Class dismissed.
It's semen grow up. There's no God. You're dismissed.
Wow.
Get out of here.
All right, what, this is the last one. What car company has a car named Vega?
Chevrolet.
Dr. Paul Sutter.
Subaru?
Chevrolet, Scott Thompson, in 1971.
Because you drive one, right?
Please, I'm the worst.
You drive a Chevrolet Vega?
Got a car thing is amazing, a car question. I mean, I'm honestly more likely to get a physics question right than a car question right.
I also, know nothing about cars, but you nailed it.
I think you won. Congratulations. Congratulations.
Wow. I don't have any thing for you.
I only won because I heard Chevrolet, Vega, they both had a V. That's literally how my thinking
they work.
But that's probably exactly why they picked the name. They're
it probably
sounds nice.
Is.
This sounds nice.
The Chevrolet Vega does sound cool.
Chevy Vega.
The Chevy Vega.
Wow.
That's probably exactly
that's
why,
exactly
why
they
it is a Chevy Vega.
Yeah.
And they were like going through all the star names. They're like Chevy Betelgeuse, Chevy Altair.
And then but an animal, the Chevy Vegan.
No one wants that.
No one wants the
that didn't
vegan.
Sell in 71.
Oh God! Can you imagine a vegan car?
Yeah.
Only ran on like tofu. In
that's
the 70s?
All that you have.
Oh my God! That car
that might be
be
cheaper though than gas.
It would be.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that pretty much does it. I don't know if you have any other. I mean, I had a question about constellations and the zodiac. If you guys believe in that, I don't know. I'm always torn about the zodiac because I think it sounds so ludicrous.
Yeah.
And then every now and then, someone will read me something about my zodiac sign, and it's so right on. So I just wanted to see what if you guys had experiences like that.
Well, I think it's ludicrous.
Ludicrous, yeah.
I mean,
just say.
Go ahead, go ahead.
No, I find astrology fascinating.
Okay,
and I have a theory about it, and I'm hopefully one day we'll develop a routine about it. I think it's the new racism, because we're not allowed to judge people because of their race or religion or ethnicity or gender, all these things. But we're human beings and we're animals, and we are essentially tribal, and we're always going to be judging people by that.
Sure.
And so what has replaced it in this time, the time we're in right now, is like political affiliation or that sort of thing, or astrology. So people can go, oh, yeah, she's a terrible driver because she's a Capricorn.
Right, like, and it's okay
yeah,
to say
yeah, she's also
it.
Chinese, but I wasn't even thinking about that. It's because she's a Capricorn. That's what I really believe
it
is. Yeah. I think it's a shell game for racism,
yeah.
For prejudice, and that no human beings will. I know, it's my theory.
I think it makes sense.
That the people go, oh, we're so much better. I'm going, no, we've just replaced with another stupid thing.
Yeah.
Anyways,
I can't top that. So,
but do you? So I guess you just don't believe.
Well, there's absolutely no connection between the positions of the sun in a particular constellation and anything about your daily life.
Okay.
The reason horoscopes are so powerful is because they're designed and written specifically to be powerful too. Where there's enough generality,
right.
Where
that's and, what they, I always, and they, I'm telling they do, myself
they
that,
do fun games.
It.
They do fun games where they'll tell people like, "Give me your sign, I'll give you a horoscope," yeah. And you rate scale 1 to 10 how accurate this was for you, and right. Then the average usually comes out around an eight out of ten.
Yeah,
across all
pretty high. That's a contact level.
And then they say, "I gave every single person the exact same horoscope. I didn't listen to your sign. I gave you the exact same thing." It's just general platitudes.
Yeah.
That,
I mean, like, I do think it matters.
You change is coming in your life and you need to you know, handle your finances better.
Yeah.
And
your
parents, you need to deal with your aging parents.
Oh my God, I do have aging parents. How would they know you're 60?
But well, yeah, I just no. And then it's the same thing. But there's a reason people you know, maybe maliciously and maybe
I don't know if it's malicious. I think it's just human.
But there's a reason.
Yeah.
People believe in horoscopes, and like I, as a scientist, I don't want to displace that. I'm not going to believe
it. They want to find reasons for their bad behavior or their bad luck,
right?
Or and they just don't want to accept that maybe it was their bad decisions.
I've gone into it thinking this is not real, this is total bullshit, and that's why I've never like investigated it. But when it has come into my life via someone else, I'm always trying to avoid. I'm always trying to say like, no, I'm sure it's bullshit, but like let's do it for fun. Yeah, let me
Although
just hear.
I do think
then it comes out, I'm like, oh,
what
man.
What time of the year you're born affects your life.
Okay, so maybe
that's... I do think
there are some mild correlations, as we would
being
say.
A winter like, baby or... And I think that probably what really affects your life more than anything is birth order. I think we're discovering that's a huge deal.
So wait, where are you guys? Like, I'm a summer baby, and I'm the oldest of four.
Oh, I'm a second... I'm second oldest of five, and I'm a summer baby.
Okay.
Summer baby, which is the first time I've ever said that.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Summer baby and second of two.
Got you. Oh. Okay, interesting. Okay.
Were you second, too?
I was first. I'm the oldest.
Of how many?
Of four.
Four. Okay.
Yeah,
I think it matters.
I think the most important thing is how wealthy your parents are.
I think that, probably
that
number
like,
one.
That's
big
like
effect.
99% of your life trajectory is how wealthy your parents are, and then everything else is small.
And what country you're born in.
Sure.
Yeah, but that's like, oh yeah,
connected
true.
Somehow.
Yeah,
I guess that means wealthy too.
Well,
money more than anything, I guess is what we've concluded.
Money is power.
Money is power.
And that's, I mean, if you want to do some science, you want some grants.
Need money.
You
need those
money.
Bucks.
Yeah. I was just going to ask if you guys have something to plug, something coming up you want to discuss before we go.
You're not busy.
While you
I'm not really busy right now, no.
While you think, Scott, you have a radio show and a book coming out in like 2 weeks.
I know, yeah. So one of the many things I do is a radio show back in Columbus called Space Radio, spaceradioshow.com. But it's broadcast in Columbus, but it's out as a podcast. I live stream every single recording every week.
Great.
It's tons of fun, listener Q&A. And then the book is coming out in 12 days from the day of this recording, which is insane.
Yeah.
Your Place in the Universe, Understanding Our Big Messy Existence.
Wow.
Barnes Noble, Books
cool.
A Million, IndieBound, nationwide release, worldwide digital release, the whole deal. So excited.
Yeah.
I'm pumped. And
fantastic.
I'm scared.
That's
I'm scared
amazing.
And excited.
First book?
first book.
I think you have nothing to be scared of. No. I think it's going to be fantastic, and everybody.
You obviously have not read it.
So is it like a kind of a Stephen Hawking thing, like explaining these complicated things to dumb people like us?
Yeah, and I'm very strongly resisting the temptation to make a Stephen Hawking joke because I really respect him. I was going to go. Never mind.
But you can make a Stephen Hawking joke. I think.
Oh, we're done. Yeah. We're done, right? No, never mind.
Yeah. It's off mic.
Are you going to say that he was he a dick? You're not going to like tell us a terrible story about Stephen Hawking, are you?
I'll tell you some terrible stories about Stephen Hawking later. No. So the book is, it's about our universe. It's a biography of our universe and the biography of our understanding of how we've grappled with the growing realization that our universe is cold and gigantic and uncaring, and the physics that goes behind that and how we've tried to understand that as scientists. It's a really, really fun book. Super conversational, informal. I tell a lot of very, very bad jokes.
Great.
And in it, it was fun to write, and I think it's fun to read.
Awesome.
If you're curious about how you fit in this universe and you really want to be sad over the holidays.
Oh, okay.
My book.
Well, I'll probably just be sad anyway.
It like doubles down on the
sadder.
Sadder.
Yeah. Gotta get a little sadder on Saturn. Terrible joke. Anyways.
Is that joke in there?
That joke.
The Saturn joke?
You know what? I do have standards.
Saturn and Saturn. Is that a chapter title? Saturn and Saturn?
No. Sorry. It's already gone to print, so I can't go back.
No, I understand. The next book, we'll put it in.
The next book.
But to get this book, we'll put the link in our description for this podcast.
I appreciate it.
So people can check it out. What about you, Scott? Can people come see you sometime? Somewhere?
Oh, right at this moment, I'm in a fallow part of my career. I've just finished a big tour.
Okay.
So I'm taking some time off, but I'll be bringing the Buddy Cole show back in the new year, called The Prelude Deluge, which is a show that I do, and I just released my first comedy album.
Great.
And the kids in the hall are talking about something possible very soon.
Oh, what?
I can't really say, but like hopefully something.
Well, if you could say theoretically.
Well, we're close to maybe, we're really trying to do something else.
It might be a light sail.
Like another, maybe a light sail. We're thinking of making a light sail. Oh, yeah.
It could be.
Yeah, it could be a light sail.
Okay, well, I will definitely be looking out.
We cannot exclude the possibility.
We can't exclude the possibility. There might be some unexplained gas coming
from our
light sail at the fringes of our solar system.
Wow, yeah, very mysterious. I like it, yeah.
Stay tuned.
Great, well, thank you guys for coming on. I really appreciate it. I hope you had a good time.
I did, actually, very much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Bye.
Bad Science is hosted and produced by me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our social media producers are Kate Baker and Edward Gullett, and the executive producer is Brett Kushner. You can follow us on Instagram at Bad Science Show and shoot us an email at badscience@seeker.com. But what I would really, really suggest is that you tell a friend about the show. Tell them a fact that you learned, spark up a conversation, and share your love of the podcast with a person that you love, or a person that you like, or a person that you think you might like, but you're not sure how you feel about them yet. You're kind of in that, you know, first phase, freshman, you get what I'm saying. Share the podcast. Let your friends know you guys will have something fun to talk about, and maybe every week you can watch the movies together. That would be really fun, right? I'm asking myself. Yes, it would be. Anyway, see you next week, where we will be talking about Free Willy. Remember Free Willy? 1993? See you then, and thank you. Bye.